This is the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, a website dedicated to bringing radio programs about Charlottesville and Central Virginia to your computer, your MP3 player, and your life. SeevillePodcast.com. Stay tuned to learn how you can win tickets to Helen of Troy. Helen of Troy might be considered as history and literature's first femme fatale. After all, she was stolen away from Menelaus of Greece by Paris of Troy. Of course, the gods were involved too, promising Paris the love of any woman he chose. What happened next paved the way for the Trojan War, and now the story of Helen is unfolding anew in Charlottesville at the City Center for Contemporary Arts, directed by Rhonda Hewitt. During the day, Hewitt serves as the marketing director for Live Arts, but she's taken on the task of directing Helen, which is the organization's first upstage presentation of the season. Helen of Troy runs through October 28th. Helen is most famously depicted in Homer's Iliad, but Hewitt says Homer's version is but one of many.
This version of Helen sort of goes back to the Euripides version, where the Helen of Troy myth, he creates a copy of the original Helen that actually has stayed with Paris and been through the entire Trojan War, whereas the real Helen has been whisked away by the gods to spend that 17 years in exile.
This production of Helen begins in a hotel room in Egypt to the sound of flies buzzing around. When the lights come up, a beautiful woman successfully strikes a fly down and takes it to the toilet. Helen quickly tells us she's been cooped up in this room for almost 2 decades, watching television for any sign of the war that she believes is being fought in her name. Obviously, Euripides didn't know about the Weather Channel.
Ellen McLaughlin, who adapted the Euripides version, very much modernized it, contemporized it, and it's very comic as well. But she sort of retells and spins off of that story. She follows it probably through about half of his version. Then she even veers off herself.
McLaughlin's play examines why Helen might be guilty of launching the war. Is it because of her beauty or the ideal of her beauty, compelling men to make irrational choices?
Two major themes I think are in the play is this sort of beauty myth that is in our culture very, very strongly, whether it's the people historically of Marilyn Monroe or Jacqueline Onassis, these beauty icons that we have, and the danger of beauty icon worship, which was also very important to the Greeks. So Ellen McLaughlin speaks to that, I think, in the themes of this story. And where that danger can lead, particularly in Helen's story, is it can cause a war. And she furthers that theme in talking about the futility of war.
Helen's only companion while in exile is her Egyptian servant. After years of asking the front desk if there's any mail for her or any phone calls, she's finally visited by various figures, each of whom she tells her story to, and each remind her in turn of the holes in what she's been telling herself all these years. First, she's visited by a cow, or rather, a woman who used to be a cow that used to be a young girl. This is McLaughlin's version of the Greek story of Io.
The two of them, Io and Helen, have sort of this quirky sort of common bond. Io was this lonely shepherdess minding her own business, and Zeus is very attracted to this innocent young girl, mortal girl, who is changing into a woman and has a ravishment, basically rapes her and changes her into a cow. And Hera, Zeus's wife, is of course pissed off at this and sends a gadfly on Io, and then she goes for 20-some-odd years just sort of traipsing around with this awful gadfly from world to world and sort of becomes a refugee of all these wars, and then is changed back into a human being, and later sires a son who becomes an Egyptian king. And because of that sort of beauty that she was this girl and then changed into a cow and then changed back into a girl, I think a lot of women can sort of strangely identify with that. When you change from a girl to a woman, your body just goes through all of these very confusing, conflicting ideas. And what we have today is girls who are anorexic or whatever the situation might be, whether the overweight issues. There's just these, I think especially in our culture today, women, and I'm sure the same is true for men, but women really have this psychological issue over beauty and and how they're perceived.
The Greek gods were known for being tricksters. Athena, the goddess of wisdom, shows up next in Helen's hotel room to taunt her with the truth that she has been copied and that her reality is now not what it has seemed.
She's been told, wait here until the war's over, then Menelaus is supposed to come pick you up, even though he's going to figure out that the copy is not the real Helen and that you're here in this hotel room. So there's all these ifs that have to come true. And she even talks about that in one speech, but she's still holding true to this is the story that she's supposed to play out. And slowly, one by one, through the course of the play, she realizes that all of those are sort of like a house of cards that has been fallen around her. And where does she go from there? How does she pick up those pieces and move on to a story that's going to still be her own?
In the play's second act, Helen is visited by Menelaus, who at first does not recognize her. Even though the Greeks triumphed over the Trojans 7 years ago, the Greek king has been blown off course by the gods and is dazed and confused. Helen tries to reclaim his love.
Helen always says, well, this didn't cause this. This was not my fault. It was this copy that did all this. She caused this. I remained faithful to you. I did not cause this war, so why am I being blamed for it? Don't blame me for it. But what we learned in doing all the text work and rehearsal process is that Helen has to come to terms with her part in this story. She may not have done the last 17 years of damage, but she is part culpable of this whole process to begin with. And so whether it's her or her copy or not, in order to own that story, she has to incorporate it and has to complete it herself and figure out where she has to go from there.
And for Menelaus, he has to carry the burden of knowing that his men will have fought in vain if he takes his Helen with him. Hewitt says that both Euripides and Homer intended their works to have an anti-war bent.
They've been fighting basically under false pretenses. And what is the outcome of that? You know, all these men, generation of men, have given their lives for this. And that's sort of the crux of the matter that even Euripides was talking about at the time when he first wrote it, that the Athenians were just getting over a huge battle themselves being fought for no reason and under false pretenses. So that's why Homer first wrote this to begin with, as sort of a very strange first anti-war story.
McLaughlin's other plays include Tongue of a Bird, Iphigenia and Other Daughters, and Infinity's House. She also originated the role of the angel in Tony Kushner's Angels in America. Hewitt says Live Arts is one of the first places to present McLaughlin's version of Helen of Troy.
Alan McLaughlin wrote this in 2002, and the only other production that I am aware of is that 2002 production at the Public Theater in New York. It starred Donna Murphy as Helen and other Broadway veterans. It was directed by Tony Kushner. And it had a limited run there. And to our knowledge, that's the only production that I am aware of. I believe it's in rehearsal right now and soon to go up in Chicago. But so it's fairly new. And it happens, she wrote it and it was performed at a time which is very still appropriate. It's even more timely now, especially with the war themes that it talks about. And the issues and concerns that it brings up about war.
If you're put off by the notion that this is a Greek tragedy, director Hewitt wants to dispel the idea that it's all in Stoic Greek. She wants people to know it's very much a contemporary work filled with comedy.
You know, I've never been a big Greek mythology person, I must admit, but I have grown much appreciative of the stories that they tell through this process. And I was in a previous show as an actor myself called World's Wife, where we had a lot of Greek mythology characters in it. And I think what the mythology still rings true today is just those real major themes about life and death and love and war. They still speak to us even today. These themes don't change. The human issues around them are still constant, the same as they were when Homer wrote the Iliad and the Odyssey, the same as when Euripides wrote all of his plays. So I think that the fact that people are still adapting them and performing them just shows the themes that they talked about then are even more important now in today's world.
Helen of Troy runs through October 28th at Live Arts, with a Sunday matinee on the 15th. Wednesdays are pay what you can night. Thursdays are for early birds with performances at 7:30. Theater time begins at 8 o'clock on Fridays and Saturdays. If you'd like to win a pair of tickets to a performance of Helen of Troy before the final curtain, send an email to contest@seavillepodcast.com. That's contest@seavillepodcast.com. Include your name and your phone number, and we'll have a drawing on Monday, October 16th. One entry per household, and limited to those over the age of 18. That's contest@seavillepodcast.com. This is the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, a website dedicated to bringing the best in arts and cultural features to your computer, as well as your MP3 player. We also bring you radio programs from WINA and WNRN. If you have any questions about how to receive a podcast, give us a call at 434-566-1217 or send us an email at info@seavillepodcast.com. I'm Sean Tubbs, and thanks for listening.